You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazio, Doc Jeff O'Neill. Dave Poulin in here. Noodles is away today. Noodles is back in Edmonton, I believe.
Yeah, he is.
Isn't he getting roasted?
No, that's in September. He's doing that.
And they're advertising it already?
Yeah, I guess. It's
a big deal.
It's a big event. Noodles is...
big charity. He's a big deal.
He is huge in Western Canada. Edmonton and Calgary. He's from Edmonton, but he obviously played in Calgary. He's a man of the people.
It is. It's shocking that he's just acclimated to Toronto and fell in love with this city.
He's a masochist. I mean, I don't know if he likes Toronto that much.
That was a joke, you idiot.
I know that. Thank you. I'm adding to the joke. You idiot. Like, do you not understand that? But yes, I get it. Like, he...
and a big Leaf fan and their supporter.
Right. Anyway, Leo Routin's coming up in about 5 minutes. Leo's down in Milwaukee ahead of Game 5 tonight. Pivotal game for both teams. Every team at home has found a way to win the game. Milwaukee's a big favorite tonight. Last time I checked, 7-point favorite. Which, they cover both numbers at home in Games 1 and Game 2, so I guess I understand where Vegas is coming from. You know, Vegas is not biased.
And they're not wrong very often either.
No, they're not. Generally speaking, they hit the number right on the head.
I just marvel at the whole betting thing. I would look around the locker room some days in my own locker room. You have to appreciate this. Say, there's no way I'd bet on these guys tonight. Like, no chance. And that was my own locker room.
I heard today that the Bruins are a pretty decent favorite in Vegas over St. Louis.
I don't see that. I wouldn't have it that way. I have them as a coin flip, but I kind of like St. Louis.
I'm on St. Louis, too, but I would think pick 'em. I mean, Boston has home ice.
It's a pick 'em. And whoever, like, there's just certain matchups that over 2 weeks, whichever one is better, is going to win the series. Can Tarasenko outplay Pasternak for 2 weeks? Can Shen and O'Reilly be better than Krejci and Bergeron for 2 weeks? Can the D-Core be better than the other D-Core? Can Binnington be better than Rask for 10 days? All those things.
You know what? Of all the names you said, like, Schwartz is on fire, right? So does he negate Marchand's contribution? One guy they don't have an answer for. I mean, Ryan O'Reilly could shut down Krejci. And Krejci's a phenomenal playoff player. Don't have an answer for Patrice Bergeron. It's the one guy, if you look upside down and inside out of the lineup, they don't have a guy. They have Braden Schenn.
Right.
He's the single. To me, you could match fourth lines. You can match Ryan O'Reilly against Krejci's line. The two wingers on the first line. You could say, yeah, Tarasenko could do what Pasternak does for sure. And on the defensive side, if you look at the two rosters, the one liability could be wearing 33 for Boston. As crazy as that sounds.
Oldest guy is banged up.
He's the oldest guy. He's been made to look very slow at different points in the playoffs. Hey, he can still cross-check with the best of them. He'll clean up the front of the net. But he could be the weak link on the Boston Bruins defense.
Well, these guys all play a different style, but I kind of feel like the Blues, they have been preparing for Bergeron because they didn't have a matchup for Scheifele either. Found a way to win.
No.
Didn't have a matchup for Sagan. Found a way to win. I'm not sure they had a matchup for Pavelski if he's healthy, although he wasn't.
No, it's a big difference.
So
They didn't really have him for Couture.
Right.
Really.
But Scheifele and
Bergeron,
you know, as great as Bergeron is,
guys.
He is. Bergeron,
he's better.
He is, but like Scheifele's real close.
Yeah, the Scheifele's difference in Bergeron for me is he takes guys with him. Like, he brings guys with him better than anybody else in the league. We talk about Stone. You might be able to play with Patrice Bergeron.
Well.
No.
Former
captain, the Barry Colts.
I was captain for a day when we went up there.
Don't get into specifics. I just said.
At some point, I had
just a former captain of the.
That's right.
Barry Colts.
That's right.
No one has to know it was a day.
Well. We should give a shout-out to The Athletic. Sean Fitzgerald was in here probably a month ago. Sean was in here and chatting with us, and he wrote a really cool piece about the show, and we want to thank him for that. And it was
really good.
I was kind of bracing myself for not a hit piece, but I'm thinking, Like Jonas,
yeah, just don't know.
There. Yeah,
you Myrtle, just don't know.
Myrtle will take a shot. Like Myrtle's, you know, the editor in chief or whatever, and he'll be like, "Nah."
I have an excerpt of it if you want to hear it.
Okay, what do you got?
Brian Hayes is not the most famous of the three Overdrive hosts, but he stands at the helm of the show every week. He makes notes through the day and usually arrives at the station with three topics to cover that afternoon. He does not always know how or when they will get to those topics, but he is the closest thing to a script on the show. Back to the first line. Brian Hayes is not the most famous of the three Overdrive hosts.
I literally just went to the piece on my phone. I've got the Athletic app, and I wanted to get one paragraph from the piece. And that's the one that I had highlighted. Because I'm like, Fitzgerald, what are you doing to me here?
Had your name in it the most, or?
No, it was pretty much equal billing. And he's not wrong. I mean, Owen Noodles played in the NHL, and they're on TV a lot. But it was a pretty, I don't know, could that have been edited out of the piece? Hayes is the third schlub that most people don't really
know.
That
was not said. He just said, not famous. That's the way I took it.
That's how I read it, too. That's my point. We both read it the same way. That's my only gripe.
You are famous because you are not famous.
Actually, you know what's funny about it, too, is there was a comment, because there's a bunch of people commenting on the piece, and a lot of like Overdrive fans, which is really cool. A couple of people in there, they're like, nah, show's all right. But one guy was wrote about his story meeting us, because he was down at the Scotiabank a couple of years ago when we gave away tickets to like a fan appreciation night. And he said he spent the night talking with me, but he didn't know who I was. He thought I was a ticket winner. He's like, he was a really nice guy.
With a really good voice.
Yeah, he's like, he was a really nice guy. And afterwards, I found out that that's actually the host of the main show on the station.
We're just super famous around here. I played golf the other morning at Weston. I went in the pro shop. SportsCenter is on. I'm on the TV with Duthie and Bob. The kid behind the desk goes, oh, that's weird. Usually there's a member at Weston on that panel. And I'm like, yeah, the guy in the middle, that's me. He goes, ah, Mr. Poulin, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, he's talking about Pooley. There you go.
He goes, yeah, there's usually a member, Weston, on that panel right there. I'm like, the guy in the middle is me.
Well, you actually have to go to the club once in a while, though, to be known. Right. You can't play once a year.
Big timing at Weston. All right, game five tonight on TSN, pivotal game. Let's head down to Milwaukee now. Here's our buddy Leo Routens. How you doing, Leo?
Hey, guys, what's up?
Oh, we're jacked up for game five tonight. We had this conversation in the previous hour. Who's had the bigger impact on the series so far? Be curious to get your take on it. Do you think it's been Kawhi, or has it been Giannis?
Oh, it certainly has been Kawhi. I think, I think once the Raptors, obviously the playoffs are all about adjustments, right? And once the Raptors made their adjustments, Kawhi has been dominant as far as that matchup goes. And it's been, in my opinion, Kawhi has just done so many different things to help his team win. And, you know, one of these guys is getting exposed right now, and that's Giannis. He's had a tremendous regular season. He may be the MVP of the league as far as the voting goes, but his weaknesses are getting exposed in this series. And obviously the Raptors hope that'll continue tonight. But, once you get exposed, I think the advantage certainly goes to the guy doing the exposing.
Well, no kidding. And Giannis, you can tell, I mean, he is not comfortable taking shots, regardless of where they are on the floor. And it's strange, because I'm with you. I think he's going to win the MVP. It's either him or Harden. But we're in an era where if you don't shoot, usually you get criticized, or you kind of get neutralized in a way. And Giannis, it doesn't seem like he's got any interest in taking shots outside of the paint. And do you think they can continue to force him into those uncomfortable situations tonight?
Well, they have to. They don't have a choice about it. And the key is, and we learned this with Ben Simmons, that you can say, it's not just saying, okay, I'm going to give him the shot. You can't do that with Giannis. What you need to do is you got to get to him early, not allow him to get up ahead of steam, come down the floor where he can create and do what he wants to do, and then worry about it. What you got to do is really important that, yes, you get up to him early, and then once he's like three-point line in, that's when you get off him and you show him the shot. But that way, at least you've slowed him down, and that could be anybody on the team to slow him down. And that's critical, because this team is built upon Giannis taking that ball down the floor, getting in the paint, and opening up all the shots for everybody else. So, it's a twofold thing. It's one part is stopping Giannis, And the other part is stopping his effectiveness and making everybody else better and giving him easy looks.
With Leo Routens ahead of Game 5 tonight, Raps, Bucks in Milwaukee. The bench really showed up in Game 4. Van Fleet started hitting shots. I thought Ibaka was very effective. He had 15 and 10 coming off the bench. First time that's happened for a Raptor. Only second time all time since Kevin Willis in 01. And Norman Powell looked incredibly comfortable, although I think he's been pretty comfortable and pretty effective throughout the series. But of those three, Leo, Fred, Norm, and Ibaka, which one do you think is really going to stir the drink for the bench tonight? Which one is it's imperative that this guy shows up and has an impact tonight?
Certainly, I think it's imperative they all step up. And, you know, coming into this series, I said that the bench is going to be a factor because this is a different matchup than we saw with Orlando and Philadelphia. Everybody talks about Milwaukee being big. Yes. But when you look at Orlando and Philadelphia, they were long and athletic, and they created all kinds of problems pressuring different players in this team. So right now, once the Raptors kind of felt their way around it and got adjusted, and actually you got a little room to breathe against the Milwaukee Bucks, which you didn't have in the other series, I felt that this team, the bench players, would become a big factor in the series. So I think it's on everybody. You know, everybody's got to come in and do their part. You know, Nick Nurse has talked about that, hey, if I go big, you big's got to be strong. If I go small, you small's got to be quick. Everybody's got to do their part when they come in the game because it's going to be crazy. I mean, tonight is going to be a crazy night. Milwaukee knows how this is a desperate game for them, and I think that if the Raptors can pressure them and stay on them, keep this game close, they're going to really feel the pressure at the end of the game.
What's the answer Milwaukee's going to have? Are they going to answer Drake? Are they going to put somebody courtside and just drive people nuts, Leo, or what? Are they going to hire someone? What's their answer going to be? Anything or not?
Yeah. Well, that whole thing's a little ridiculous. I mean, to me, that's a big distraction from the fact that you're coming home after losing two games. There's a lot of conversation about that and not about, what happened and how you played. And like I said, to me, it's just a big distraction. I mean, Drake's a superstar. I think he's great for the city. He loves Canada, loves Toronto, promotes the heck out of it. And anything he's doing doesn't bother me. I have no issues with it.
Have you ever been calling a game, though, and he's been in the way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you know what? When you guys know, like, when you're calling a game, you're really 50-50 watching it live and on a monitor anyway, because you got to call what people at home are seeing. So you're constantly watching the game and watching your monitor. So nobody yells at the referees for being on our way, or the coaches being on our way, or the players being in our way. So, Drake doesn't bother me. As a matter of fact, it's kind of fun to watch the interaction that goes on between him and players. So there's a lot of talk, a lot of trash talk. So it's kind of fun.
Well, have you heard anything? I mean, I know it's not going to apply tonight, but for Game 6 when they come home, about the league issuing a warning to the team about Drake. I mean, Milwaukee, they can't stop talking about the guy.
Yeah, I just think this is Milwaukee's problem right now. I don't think Drake's doing anything bad. I mean, he's not going on the court. Players have been talking trash since the history of the game. And, you go back to Spike Lee and a whole bunch of other guys and fans. I mean, there used to be, it's mellowed now, but there used to be some great hecklers in the history of the game that I thought were hilarious. And they were a big part. Players actually look forward to going to arenas and listening to some of the stuff that there was going to be said. There was a guy, Leon, in Detroit that probably had some of the funniest lines that cracked up the whole bench. And, we were the visiting team with Philly when I was playing. So it's not a big deal. It's, I think they need to worry about what they're doing on the floor more than what Drake is talking about.
The thumb injury to Kyle Lowry, a non-factor here?
Well, it's hard to say it's a non-factor, but he's going to play through it. I mean, Kyle's a tough dude, and at this time of year, everybody's banged up in some way. And I have had similar injuries to what Kyle's going through right now, and it's painful as heck. And I mean, the only good thing is it's on his offhand, and he still can shoot the basketball. It can affect a lot of things, but as long as it doesn't affect your shot, then you got to be grateful for that.
Enjoy it tonight, Leo. Really appreciate you finding some time for us, buddy.
Hey, always a pleasure. Enjoy.
There he is, Leo Routens.
Hey, you hear Rod?
There's Rod in the background. We got Rod, I think, in here tomorrow. I think Rod's going to be co-hosting tomorrow. So
he should be hosting. If you had any jam, you would take the passenger chair tomorrow.
Not going to happen.
Come on.
Not going to happen, but
just try it. Let Roddy host.
Why would he want that type of responsibility?
But he's acknowledge that he's a co-host coming in with you. That's kind of equal billing.
Yeah. Well, I consider myself one of the co-hosts. We're all the co-hosts on this show, but...
That wasn't the way it sounded a little bit earlier. It was more like the host.
Well, with him, I have to keep him in line. You, Noodles, Rod, you know, Hedge, whoever else comes in here, it's all equal billing. But Rod doesn't want that type of responsibility. He wants to probably show up 5 minutes before the show, sit down. Somehow he's going to come back from Milwaukee with a tan.
If he's a pro, he'll be here at 3 p.m. sharp.
Well, he's flying in, I think, tomorrow morning.
Have him fill you in on Milwaukee, and I will tell you that it's a pretty good town.
What's so great about Milwaukee?
It's a good town. It's a good beer-drinking town.
That's just a total hockey player answer. It's a good beer-drinking town.
Say that about any town.
I know. You could literally go to Sutton, Ontario, and find a place to drink. There's actually nice places in Sutton.
There you go.
Is that a good beer-drinking town?
Or no, sorry, Keswick. There's nice places in Keswick on the water.
Oh, Keswick's a beautiful
town.
The
home of Miller Lights, the home of Schlitz Brewery. I mean, you got a couple of breweries right downtown.
Yeah, but you still got to pay for them, though. That's what gets lost on people.
Noodles.
That's a lot cheaper.
Noodles
than it is
was
in Toronto,
uplifting yesterday when we were talking about, like, we were trying to find famous people from Milwaukee.
Laverne and Shirley.
No, who did he come up with?
Versace is from Milwaukee.
No.
Well, Gene Wilder's from Milwaukee.
No, he come up with a serial killer or something.
Oh, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. He's like, Jeffrey Dahmer's from there. I was like, wow, uplifting.
Yeah, thanks, Noodles.
He might be from Mequon, Wisconsin.
And that wasn't Versace, you idiot.
Or no, it was Liberace.
Liberace.
Liberace. Dude, it's just as shocking.
One of the guys changed their names, though.
Well, Liberace didn't. That's his real name.
Yeah, I know. It's like
You're not saying that with conviction.
Look up his Wikipedia page. His last name is Liberace.
You believe his Wikipedia page?
I guess. That's all I'm going on.
My name is Vincenzo Sosenzo. Liberace, where are you from? Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly. Puts on the full accent and then Milwaukee.
My name is Gino Red Versace Liberace. I'm from Milwaukee.
Actually, it's pronounced Milwaukee, which is Algonquin for the good land.
Home of Liberace. I couldn't believe that. I was still stunned by that last night. I got home.
You should be stunned by that.
I honestly just assumed that guy was from...
I think we got to challenge the fact that he changed his name at some point.
I'm telling you, man. Wikipedia. Don't challenge Wikipedia. Pulley, we looked it up last night. This is a journalistic program. We have integrity, and we make sure that we get the answer right. Versace, Liberace.
Good town.
Who gives a crap?
Don't underestimate the town. Great golf course. It's just north of there,
Well, Madison, Wisconsin,
Whistling
there's a couple
Straits.
Of spots. Listen, we're not in the business of pumping the tires in Milwaukee today. We're at war with the city of Milwaukee.
We are.
They're not pumping the tires at Toronto, so we're not going to do it for them. But they don't have anybody famous. It's still alive. I mean, Gene Wilder's gone. Liberace's gone.
Laverne and Shirley.
But that's a fiction. Those are fictional characters. Nobody. I think Aaron Rodgers might be in the house tonight, maybe.
Yeah, but he's not going to sit there and chirp, guys.
No.
Just keep letting them stew over it. If it bugs them, great. They got no answer for it. They got to win this game, or it could be game over.
Well, I think if the Raptors
win tonight. Yeah, if Milwaukee loses tonight, it's over.
You can tell they're buckling. Like, the pressure's all on Milwaukee. It's all on Giannis. It's all on Milwaukee. They felt so good about themselves, and they should have coming to Toronto up 2-0. Like, the Raptors, they didn't put up much of a fight from the fourth quarter of game one through the end of game two.
But it's the travel day with the type of win you have that carries that momentum. If they'd have just squeaked out game two, it wouldn't have been as convincing as they rolled them in game two.
Right. They probably felt great about themselves. They were probably thinking, Raptors are just going to hand this to us. You know, they're spent from the Philly series. We got through Boston in five. We swept in the first round against Detroit. We're home free. We're feeling good. No one can touch us.
Yeah, what's the right amount of time off? That's the key thing.
Well, it's going to be challenged here with Boston in the Cup Final. Golden State, though, they're not human, so I don't think they count.
They don't count.
Golden State doesn't count.
They don't count.
They could turn around and play a seven-game series, seven games in a row, right after finishing that round against Portland, and I think they'd sweep.
Their wins appear easier than other wins.
Yeah. Golden State doesn't count. Boston, though, counts. Stephen Brampton pointing out, Bob Uecker is from Milwaukee.
Nice.
Bob Uecker counts.
Big time.
I love Bob Uecker.
We just a bit outside.
We just try to, a bit outside.
Try to get him on if we can.
Great call. Grapples? Does he still work for a Major League Baseball team?
Yeah, he calls the Brewers games on radio, I believe. I think he's only ever done radio in
How
Milwaukee.
How old is that guy? He was like old in Major League.
He'd be in his 80s now, I think.
He'd have to be.
Yeah.
85 years old. Bobby Uecks.
Just a bit outside.
I think he might have the whole I don't do road games anymore in the contract, which is really the sign of someone who...
If you're from Milwaukee, you should just do road
games. I think of any sport, he could do it in his basement in his underpants. Because it's baseball, you could watch the game, you could do the radio call from your basement.
Like the Bull Durham?
Yeah, he could. If he's got a feed, he could do it from home.
Yeah. Dave's called hockey games.
Off tube.
Yeah. And baseball's way easier than that.
Yeah. You just get in your underpants and get downstairs. And
I actually wear clothes.
Just a bit outside.
Yeah. Underpants.
Just a bit outside.
I love the color guy in that. He doesn't say a word the whole season.
I know.
Just,
he's that little guy with the brown curly hair.
Yeah. Incredible analysis. Grab that clip, because at some point Euchre's like, they don't call you the best in the business for nothing.
It's almost like he didn't have a speaking part in the movie.
Right. Like, they didn't have a budget for any actual words for him. We don't have any lines for you.
Because you have to pay you more in the union if right. you speak.
We need you just
but
as
you're the
visual.
Color guy.
John Candy played a play-by-play baseball guy in a movie. Didn't he? I can't remember. Was it Rookie of the Year or Angels in the Outfield? One of those stupid Disney movies. I think I remember John Candy playing a play-by-play guy. But the beauty of Euchre is that he's actually a play-by-play guy.
He might be more famous for the Miller Lite commercials than he is for...
Some of the greatest commercials ever.
Milwaukee, home of Miller Lite.
That's right. Got to get Bob Euchre on. Got to. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up from the World Hockey Championships, where Canada stole one today. Scored with 0.4 seconds left on the clock to tie it and send it to overtime.
So did Finland.
And Finland has beaten Sweden.
And the
so
U.S. is out. Three of the biggest favorites going in.
Your boy Bill Nylander's officially on his offseason.
No medals.
No medals for William.
For Sweden, U.S., or Canada going
in? I think for
that?
His offseason, I think he might take 2 weeks off and maybe no time off.
Better not take a lot of time off.
Okay, we'll come back and talk a little bit about that. DJ Smith is the new head coach in Ottawa. We'll let you hear what Pierre Dorion had to say about the budget and how it factored into the hiring, and what Eugene Melnyk said about the Maple Leafs defensive play a few months ago.
We're playing audio today. I like where
we
your head's at.
We got some audio.
I like where your head's at.
Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, it's a playoff game night for the Raptors tonight. Remember to head over to the Amsterdam Brewhouse on the Queen's Quay, TSN 1050's playoff headquarters. And Ray will join us here in a moment from Slovakia, where Canada survived. Canada survived.
Can you say barely?
Well, .4.
And the one defenseman, I think it was Severson, he had one shot blocked, then he just was like, oh, well, I might as well put this on. It went in.
About 15 seconds to go in the game, Swiss player on the boards had a chance. Severson kept it in. It was an unbelievable play to keep it in. Then he had the two shots.
Right.
That Stone is money, though.
Oh, he's so good. Ottawa could probably use him, but he's in Vegas now, and DJ Smith has left the Maple Leaf organization. He's taken over as the head coach in Ottawa.
Wishes he still had Mark Stone.
Absolutely. Which is interesting, because when DJ was in Toronto, he ran the defensive side of things, and he ran the penalty kill. The penalty kill obviously wasn't very good this year, and against Boston, it was really exposed. Not all his doing, clearly, and the players have to go out there and perform. But when we talk about the Maple Leafs, a lot of times when you begin with the negative, you begin with the defensive play. And we're not alone in that, because Eugene Melnyk has commented on that in the past, where he did radio, I want to say it was back in March, I think, in Ottawa. And here's what Melnyk had to say about the defensive play of the Maple Leafs.
I know a team that you know that's done it for 53 years. They've been selling out. But all they do is they've been patching up. Finally, they collapse the team, say, we got to do a rebuild. But, you know, mistakes were made. Somebody forgot about defense. They cannot, I better not say what I was going to say, but they're going to have a tough time winning a Stanley Cup without defense.
Thanks, Huge.
He just hired the guy who ran the defense in Toronto. Like, how do you explain yourself, if you're DJ Smith, to Eugene Melnyk, when Melnick's like, hey, what happened there in Toronto?
Well, Mr. Melnick went on a little roll right at that time because that was actually in Toronto that he said
yeah,
that.
He was
here doing a corporate thing. And at the same time, he said, and we're hiring a new president of hockey operations, which
nobody knew was coming.
He has not done either.
Right.
He has not done that. But that was the whole taking a shot at the Leafs. And so there was a swagger in his step right at that moment. Without a doubt.
I don't have a problem with him taking a shot at Toronto. I mean, his team is a disaster, but I get it. That's his biggest rival, and I think you're playing to your market. You know, I said it at the time. I wouldn't have an issue with him. If I'm a Senators fan, I want to hear him take a shot at the Maple Leafs.
You know what the amazing thing is about Ottawa is I was looking at my schedule, and I was thinking, I was way busier last year right at this time, and I thought, well, I was still in back and forth to Winnipeg because they were in the Final Four. And I said, yeah, but 2 years ago I was really busy. What was that? Oh, that was Ottawa going to the Final Four. It's only 2 years ago. Two full seasons ago.
2 years ago they were in Game 7 overtime. Game 7 overtime.
Chris Kunitz won it for the Pens.
Right.
Crazy. Crazy.
So, yeah. Listen, DJ Smith, I know of him because he's been the assistant coach here in Toronto, but he never got to speak, so I can't really say I know a lot about him. My understanding is he's well thought of within the organization. I think the players had a quality relationship with him.
So if you were a head coach or a management team, would you let your assistant coaches speak? Because there's more than the Leafs don't.
I think you're just. What's the difference? Like,
I don't understand why you wouldn't.
Assistant coaches are like, what are they going to do? Release secret information? It's just such a narcissistic approach by a head coach to say that our assistants are not speaking. Like, it makes me sick.
I think it's the market. I think it's trying to control the message.
There are a couple other teams that do it. Philly does it. Montreal does it.
Doesn't allow their assistants to speak. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. What do you make of that, Ray? The Maple Leafs, other teams, you know, the head coach is the only guy that can speak, and the assistants are muzzled completely.
Well, I think it's kind of silly. Now, I wouldn't want my assistants, randomly doing interviews. Like somebody's going to do an in-depth story on one of the assistant coaches. I'd want to know if I'm the PR department when that's happening. I don't want guys just walking up to them and starting to interview them. I want to have a little sense of what's being said and when it's being said. But for the most part, like I think O was kind of touching on, is like, it's not like these guys are going to say, oh yeah, by the way, we're benching player A. Like, that stuff's going to come from the head coach.
It's just ridiculous.
I like when teams have like the, you know, on a specific day, San Jose does it a lot, and they did it a lot in the playoffs, was that Steve Spott would go out and speak. Like, why not? Like, it's a different voice. It's different phrasing. It gives somebody else to listen to. Like, I don't know. So much of it seems in a lot of ways about control. That, you know, I'm the head guy. I'm the only guy that'll speak. I'll deliver the message in the tone that I want it to be delivered in. And after a while, you're tired of the media. The media is tired of you. I think by letting somebody else speak, that you stretch out that period of time before everybody's tired of each other, and it can only help you.
I think Toronto is the one place where they should let the assistant. Like, I want to hear Babs say dig in anymore. I don't.
They do the complete opposite here, though. Like, even in the front office, only Kyle Dubas will speak, and occasionally Shanahan. They hire, you know, an assistant GM. That guy's not doing the rounds. No one can talk to him.
I've never heard that anywhere else, though, Brian. I can't even think. Pooley, I don't know. Have you even heard of an assistant GM giving interviews anywhere? I don't ever think I've heard that.
It used to be here. Pooley used to do interviews when you were running. When you were here in the front office with Nonis and Burke.
Yes.
And
yeah, we split it up.
Right.
We were all involved doing radio hits or whatever. So, yeah, I think they do, Ray, more than you probably think they do. I mean, I think they do radio hits or whatever to spread it out, just to balance it
a
little bit.
I'm trying to think, like, in Calgary. Well, in Calgary, I guess you hear from Craig Conroy.
Yeah, you do. For sure you hear from Craig.
Yeah.
Brad Pascal, you hear from?
Yeah, I'm trying to think in Winnipeg.
Well, Zinger hides anyway. You never.
Yeah,
he's a shadow. He's hiding behind a pole right now.
You could have a microphone beside him and he'd escape somewhere.
He is the shadow. He is unbelievable.
But it is interesting. A lot of it is so much about control. And it's that way from the way, you know, teams like to dictate everything, every schedule, every minute, every player availability, every, you know, which players are available to speak after practice, all that. They're all trying to control the message 100%, and that can never be done.
Well, Toronto's, they're trying to perfect it. Like, they have, how it has changed so much over the years since I've been in the media in Toronto, like dating back to Ron Wilson, where he would do radio interviews every single week. Every single Friday, he was on the radio. And now Mike Babcock.
Well, most coaches have radio shows.
Right, a lot of them. And not only in the NHL.
Own? Pardon? Yeah.
Their own?
Yeah, well, that's usually part of the deal with their local affiliate or whatever, is right. That they do, you know, a regular hit. Or
they do a
regular
hit. They call it their show.
Yeah, they call it a show.
It's built into a morning 10-minute
hit or
a
15-minute hit. Yeah.
Yeah, like Bill Belichick is on the radio every single week in New England. That's Bill Belichick.
That must be riveting.
Well, no kidding, but I'm sure there's value to it. Like, if you're in the car, you might be like, no, Belichick. Like, I don't know if they have to do every week. I'm not saying they have to do every week. And now with the media landscape in Toronto, it's very different than it was back when Wilson was here. But Babcock, you know, he does his scrum, but he doesn't do a lot more than that. And the assistant coach is like,
I wouldn't either. It's like, I'll do my scrum, which is daily, which is painful enough, which is three times a day on game days. That's enough.
And they're clearly on his terms, those scrums.
Oh, yeah. When he's finished answering, thank you and goodbye.
Right.
Have a good day, guys.
Well, he did that in Game 7. He took off. One hard question about Patrick Marleau being on the ice, and he had had enough. Which I thought was embarrassing, and that's where someone should have stepped in. Although I guess, what are you going to say if you're running the PR? You can't force them to sit down and take more.
Yeah, you want to do that? Good luck.
Yeah, there's not much you can do, I guess. But anyway, you've had an interesting day over there. How about this Canadian team tying the game with 0.4 left on the clock? Have you ever called a game like that or a finish like that?
Not that late. Heck. 4 games ago, Mark Stone scored with 1.8 seconds left, and that was late. And then this, it seemed like, even though the puck was behind the goalie three or four times in the third period, you know, they couldn't, Dubois had a couple chances, he couldn't get it to go, and it kind of seemed like, even though Canada was dominating the period, that they were just out of time. Marchessault had a chance with like 6 or 7 seconds left, the puck went in the corner, and it's like, I'm thinking as Gord's calling the game out, that's over. It's done. And then it comes to Severson. The first shot gets blocked, and it comes right back to him. And you know, and then the thing goes right through the goalie. And it's funny, there's no, in the rink here, there's not even a green light that goes on behind the net. So, you know, in the NHL rinks, the green light's the end of the period. And that's not the definitive answer, but at least it gives you a sense of, you know, of whether it was in or not, because we look up on the clock, it says it's got all zeros. Then you got to wait for the review. And I mean, Mark Stone's so good. Like, I as I'm watching, I come up with this, and I'm like, I know they don't play the same position, but he's as close to Patrice Bergeron in my mind as there is. He scores, he kills the penalties, he plays on the power play, he steals the puck, he can do whatever you need him to do. Bergeron's not super fast. Stone's not either. But they're always seemingly in the right spot. Ryan O'Reilly would be another guy that I'd throw into that group. They're kind of all the same. Like, they're just in the right place all the time.
The really remarkable thing, Ray, is that he was available in late February. To think of a player of that caliber at 27 years old, and yes, the contract was looming, he was a, you know, pending UFA, but that player, as great as he is, was available. And he was traded for, yes, a good prospect, but he was traded in late February. You could have had that player in your team.
Well, it basically, as I, you know, my sense, and just in talking to people around, was that Ottawa was going to make that deal not for futures. They were going to make that deal for the very best prospect that they were able to get, and that was Eric Brännström. And so if I'm another team and I've got a young prospect and I think I've got a chance of getting Mark Stone signed, like a very good prospect, because Brännström's a top end, you know, has top end potential. Man, if I can plug Mark Stone into my lineup, he's not going to get slower or too slow. He's already not fast enough. It doesn't matter. His brain goes way faster than the game. He's always like he's always there. He's always in the way. He always gets the puck. And he's got strong hands, and he's got good hands. He's had an amazing tournament. And, you know, Vegas got to be thrilled to have him locked up.
Well, we all conceded that if it was an Olympic year, Mark Stone would be on the team. I don't know where he would play up and down the lineup, because Bergeron plays on the wing with Sid. So, you know, Stone's going to play further down the lineup, I guess, on the right side. But we couldn't think of a guy on the fly, you know, anyone else on this current team that would make an Olympic team. Is there anyone we're missing?
Would Sean Couturier be in?
Maybe.
Yeah, potentially in a defensive role.
Fourth line guy.
Although he scores a lot of points now. Potentially. He's taking all the big draws over there. He's playing a significant role over there on that team.
I mean their top, the guy they use the most on the blue line is Shabbat, but he wouldn't be in that group yet. No, I don't think so. Would Matt Murray be in contention for one of the goalies?
Maybe. Maybe third, you know, second or third guy, I think, maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, they had to squeak past Switzerland, but Switzerland's a pretty good team. Like, Yossi's over there, and they got a couple of players, and yet here they are.
The Swiss are like a pain in the ass.
Always.
Like, they just never go away.
Right.
They're never the best team, except they play really well. They seem comfortable when they don't have the puck. They just, like, check, 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 check. And they hang around, and all of a sudden they got the lead. And it's kind of like the Finns. If you could name five guys on this Finnish roster, like, you win the game.
Yeah.
Because Gord had a line early in the tournament. He's like, there's a warehouse of Finnish players, and they're all the same, outside of the very highly skilled ones. He's like the guy that got 4 points today, scored the winner, Manninen. He's a really good player. He's been on a couple of world championship teams, but he's the same as everybody else. They all skate. They all check. They're all blocking shots, and nothing's really fancy. And if you put those two rosters together, I was looking at my game prep, and the two rosters are sitting side by side. The Swedes should blast those guys. It shouldn't even be close. And Finland's going on, and the Swedes are going home.
Well, and William Nylander's starting his offseason now.
18 points.
What a tournament.
What the final was?
How long would you give him off? Like, how long should he take off, Ray, with the year he had and not playing half the season? What should his program be?
He should be back at it June 15th. Because he still played 65 games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in that range, I think. Take a couple of weeks off. Make sure that you're healthy and ready to go. And then June 15th, that gives you, you know, 2.5, almost 3 months till training camp. And, you know, he's in playing shape now because he just finished. And that gives you plenty of time to be ready to go. I will say this about him today. He made an unbelievable play on the power play goal. He missed a breakaway in the third period. Didn't notice him one other time.
Well.
Like, didn't get anything done. The Swedes, which I love the Swedish players. Like, I really do. They're great teammates, and they do so much right. But it was driving me crazy as they were later in the game. They've been, you know, they're pushed back in their zone, and they keep rolling out four lines. Hey, I got an idea. How about play the guys that can protect the lead in the NHL? They're probably good enough here. Shorten the bench. Go down to 4D. Tell your guys, we're better than them. How about making a pass? To make a play to get out of the zone. They punted out to center ice, and here come the Finns again. And they got burned. I mean, their tying goal was with like a minute and 30 left. And then the Finns went in overtime. Lundqvist was not good today. He didn't have a very good tournament. And that'll be big news in Sweden that they didn't get themselves to the semis.
How do you feel about that piece in The Athletic before we let you go?
That piece was that piece could have gone in the way that our show mostly goes.
Anywhere.
Like, I thought it was pretty well on the lane, pretty well in the lines there, you know? Like, it, I think Sean did a good job of keeping it on the tracks.
Yeah, I think we got lucky. Like, he's, you know, he's a nice guy, and he came in, he wrote, it was a flattering piece. We got really lucky to be a part of it. We're very appreciative, but that could have gone south. It could have been a hit piece pretty easily.
Well, just think, the first time that it occurred to him that, oh my God, I'm really interested, I gotta you know, write about these guys or start following them a little closer. We're talking about my vasectomy reversal and your buddy's
circumcision at 30.
30.
Yeah, that's how you launch a great article. That is a launch pad for an article.
Well, what do they call that? That's the hook to the story. They're like, these idiots talk about this on sports radio. Are you kidding me?
Yep, and it's not going to stop. That's how we roll.
Circumcised at 30 is a tough, tough go.
It's a sacrifice unlike anything I've made in my life. And I don't think I'll ever match it.
Just think, your buddy's wife is going to say, I want you to come to the mall to me or with me on Sunday. He can always say, do you know what I've done for you?
Right. The circumcision card. The circumcision card is a very unique card, but it's a powerful one, man. It's out of the doghouse.
It might be the only one
for eternity. I go out with the boys and get drunk every night.
Yeah.
There's your payback.
I would like to apologize to Pooley for calling him old during the broadcast, but I meant it.
That's appreciate that. It was a bit of a cheap shot. You slid it right into the conversation.
It's all good.
Yeah.
You might reference the fact that you played most of your career against me as well, Ray.
Oh, that's irrelevant. Gord was talking about Tim Kerr, and for those of you that don't know Tim Kerr, you know, he was a scorer with the Flyers, and then he said, you know, Ray, you know, not to leave out part of the story, you played a long time against him. I said, I'm way younger than him. I said, now Pooley played with him. He's old.
There you go. Sandbag
so
Pooley.
Well,
unnecessary.
He's halfway around the world.
He can't retaliate.
He's probably not listening, or he was.
All right, buddy.
Or he was.
Well, enjoy it over there. I'm sure if we don't do it tomorrow, we'll do it early next week.
Yeah, I'm going to. We're going to Bratislava tomorrow, and then what do we got? Semifinals on Saturday, and the medal games on Sunday, and we're on the plane Monday.
All right, perfect, man. Enjoy it.
Beautiful. Take care, guys.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are back. Purchase any vehicle and get a $500 gift certificate to Appliance Canada, plus get rates from 0%, mapletoyota.com. Donovan Bailey coming up. DJ Smith, the new head coach of the Ottawa Senators at 6:25. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Game 5 tonight in Milwaukee. We are teeing that up. You can watch it on TSN tonight. Donovan Bailey was down at Scotiabank, I believe, for both Game 3 and Game 4. Definitely for Game 4.
I have a question about that.
Yeah, he's going to join us in about 10 minutes. And we're going to get into being a celebrity at a big game.
Want to know what my question is? How do you get the ticks? Because I can't get in that building.
You're trying to get in there for...
I'm trying to...
Well, you want to sit courtside, though. You want to be in the first row.
I do not. I'm gonna flat out ask them.
Why would you not want to be courtside, though, if you can?
They're not available to me.
Why not?
Oh, come on.
You can get in there. I think you wear the alumni jacket, you'll be fine.
I think Oak could be rubbing Nick Nurse's shoulders by...
I agree. Donovan Bailey, DJ Smith, in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.